The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Okay, you've heard me refer to this gentleman many, many times because of all the guests, and I mean we have a lot of guests on this show, as you know, of all the guests that have ever come on this show and talked about interest rates, this gentleman has been more accurate by far than anyone else. And I have a great deal of respect for him. I love to hear him talk. I don't get to do it often enough. As far as I'm concerned, he's the top analyst in the top economist in the country with regard to interest rates and where things are going. So we're proud to have with us today Dr. Lacey Hunt. Dr. Hunt is an internationally known economist. He's executive vice president of Hoisington Investment Management. They're up in Austin, Texas. The firm manages over $5 billion for pension funds, endowments, insurance companies, and others. So if you're out there and you run a large endowment or you run a large company's portfolio, you might want to consider talking to these folks up here, because if Lacey's helping to drive the performance up there, you're going to get great advice. He's the author of two books, and he's quoted everywhere. And so we're proud this morning to have Dr. Lacey Hunt with us this morning. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mike. It's overly kind.
No, I love hearing you talk. And it was January of last year that you were on with us the last time, and you made the comment then that interest rates were not going to go up that year, that they were actually going to go down. Every other economist on Wall Street, whether it were the talking heads on CNBC or folks that I was bringing on at the spring of the year, they were all saying, no, rates are going to go up, rates are going to go up. I think the average prediction that I found from it was that the 10-year was going to end up the year about 2.75%, maybe 3%, but not you. You said, nope, it's going the other direction, and you were right on target. So a great deal of respect and admiration for that. What do you think is going to happen now?
Well, I think that the problems the country's been faced with over the last several years really haven't changed. I mean, we get various short-term influences that enter from time to time, but the problem is the U.S. economy and the global economy has got too much debt, too much of the wrong type of debt. Creates this start and stop economy, which we generally underperform. Probably one of the best ways of looking at it. We've been in a recovery of in a technical sense for 6 years, and the real GDP growth in per capita terms, which takes out the effect of population, is just 1.3% per annum. That's the weakest expansion since the country was founded in 1790.
Wow.
I don't really expect anything different to happen. Another condition of when economies are extremely over indebted, you not only get poor growth, but you get inflation at very, very low levels. And inflation rate in the United States is slightly positive, it's slightly negative in Europe and Japan. It's a sign of weak economic activity, and that's basically what we've had, what we're going to continue to have, unless we're able to resolve the indebtedness problem, and we're not able to resolve it. We're trying to solve the debt problem by taking on more debt, and that gives us these transitory spurts in economic activity, but they have no staying power.
So is there a way to get out of this? You're painting a picture like we've kind of put ourselves in a box and we can't, and there's no way out of the box.
Well, there's none with monetary policy. Monetary policy is overused, and it really is part of the problem. The world created too much debt in the 20 years leading up to 2008. This debt was largely in the advanced economies. Since then, debt has surged in China and the emerging economies of the world. The way I look at it, public and private debt is about $60 trillion greater than it was at the time of 2008. Over that same time period, GDP is only up about $12 trillion, so we continue to take on more of the unproductive type of debt. There was a recent BIS study, Bank for International Settlements. They've done outstanding work here. If you look at debt relative to GDP, in 2008 it was around around 215%. Now we're around 265%. There's a lot of academic research that indicates that when public and private debt rises above 250% of GDP, that growth rate slows materially. In the United States, our debt to GDP is approximately 370%. It's higher than that in Europe, still higher in the United Kingdom. And, of course, Japan, public and private debt's about 650%. So the world is extremely over-indebted. And it's a treadmill to nowhere. That's basically the pattern.
Treadmill to nowhere. Boy, that's a great quote. But I'm looking at Peggy. She looks depressed from it.
I did.
Now, Janet Yellen, well, I assume that this means that your forecast will be similar to what was last January of 2014, that interest rates have no room to go up. But Janet Yellen says,
well, they can go up. They can go up, and they do all the time. Uh-huh. But they don't have the capacity to stay up. The growth rates can accelerate from time to time, so can inflation, but they cannot stay up. The debt repayment obligations are the controlling factor. You can get spurts in economic activity, but you cannot get a self-reinforcing process.
Do you feel like Janet Yellen will be? Janet Yellen seems to be under a lot more political pressure than Bernanke. They kind of watch. It seems to me they kind of watch Bernanke to see what he was doing. But it seems that since she's taken over, there's a lot more opinions and a lot more pressure to raise. Do you think she's going to raise, and do you think that's true? Is she under a lot more pressure?
I think that the economy is really too weak to justify more than a token increase in rates. I lean to the view that there'll be no increase, but there could conceivably be some sort of a gesture toward higher rates. I don't think it'll be a continuing pattern, but I'm doubtful that even one small rate increase will occur this year or even next year. Economy just simply too weak. Just give you a couple of things that we're looking at. The manufacturing sector, which is your high value added component of the economy, has declined by more than 1% this year. We've had some gains in automotive, which have helped hold the decline, but excluding automotive, the drop in the industrial sector is 1.5%. Last year, the payroll job series, which is a very badly distorted series, because if you hold more than one part-time job, you get counted for each part-time job you hold. But last year, the payroll series rose 260,000 a month. In the 9 months of this year, we're rising only 198,000. So we've in 9 months we've created about 550,000 fewer jobs than we did in the comparable period last year. So the economy has significant problems. Corporate profits, using the numbers that coming up through the Internal Revenue Service to the Bureau of Economic Analysis, are lower than they were 2 years ago. And that's creating a problem for capital spending. The headline durable orders and the core durable orders are both significantly negative over the past year. We just don't really have any vitality in our big ticket sectors other than housing. Housing has had a good year, but its gains in the last 3 months have slowed rather dramatically. So there's really nothing to propel the economy forward, or nothing to propel. There's no engine of growth for the global economy.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about that, sir, if you can hang on, Dr. Hunt, for just a few more minutes on the other side of the break. We'll be back in just a moment, folks. We've got Dr. Lacey Hunt with us. Back in a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We are very pleased this morning, if you're just joining us, to have Dr. Lacey Hunt with us. Dr. Hunt is an internationally known economist. He's Executive Vice President of Oystinton Investment Management. It's a firm in Austin, Texas, that manages over $5 billion for pension funds, endowments, insurance companies, and others. And he has been the most accurate of the 4 years that we've been doing this. He has been the most accurate economist that we have ever had on the show, and so we're thrilled to have him. We haven't had him on since January 2014, so we are very thrilled to have Dr. Hunt on with us this morning. And during the break, he and I were having a conversation that I really should have held off and asked the question on the air. So I'm going to frame the question again because the answer was fascinating. My question to Dr. Hunt was, as you've heard me say on the show from time to time, we'll read something where it says that the savings rate, like yesterday I was talking about aggregate demand being down because Americans were saving more, and it was kind of surprising a lot of the economists that Americans were just not out spending. But Dr. Hunt gave us a very good explanation of that. Dr. Hunt, can you talk again about the fact that, yes, we're saving more, but really not so much in historical proportions?
No, well, the saving rate is what we earn less what we spend divided by what we earn, taken off of the country's income statement. The saving rate, when we draw the saving rate down, we buy now, we pay later. So we've been buying now, planning to pay later. There becomes a point in time where the pay later overwhelms the buy now, but the saving rate in the latest month was under 5%. I think 4.6 was the actual number. And that's approximately where we entered the last two recessions. That's also where we entered the Great Depression in 1929. It's a very depressed level of saving. Income is not kept up and permitted. Consumer spending has risen faster than income this year for a couple of reasons. Number one, there's, which we talked about, the availability of automobile loans. Also there has been a government-financed increase in medical care. But aside from those two elements, consumer spending is very, very weak. That's what accounts for the fact that you've seen very poor earnings numbers from a lot of the retailers. Some of them have been forced to lay staff off.
Right. And you were talking about something that our good friend Harry Dent actually brought up on our show earlier, is that we've now got seven-year car loans in order to get people into vehicles. We have seven-year car loans, which is an amazing thing to me because the car must be worth zero by the end of that time period.
It's always a benefit when you lengthen the term from 5 to 6 to 7 years, when you lower the credit standards. You know, buy now.
Right.
The problem is, can those loans be serviced? Debt is an increase in current spending in exchange for a decline in future spending. Debt only works if the debt generates an income stream to repay principal and interest. And automobile loans for consumers are not an investment that generates the income stream to repay
right.
principal and interest. So it over time it becomes a drag, and the only way you can offset it is at some point in time you have to go from a 7-year car loan to an 8-year car loan. And that process can work for a while, but there's an end game there.
Wow. So when you look at our economy, when you look at the whole situation with the world, it seems like the whole world, I call it we're the prettiest girl at the dance, but boy, it's a really ugly dance because nobody seems to be very healthy. We seem to be the healthiest person, which means we're taking less medicine than everyone else. What do you see as you go forward? Are we going to get out of this? Are we going to have a kind of a worldwide readjustment where we have some pretty severe sell-offs in equity markets and maybe even in real estate or other areas? What do you see as you look forward?
I continue to see this same start and go pattern for the time being. I mean, at the end of last year, the Federal Reserve was projecting that nominal GDP, which would be the price change and the change in real output, would be 4.1% this year, which would have been a slight acceleration from what it was in 2014. Well, in their September forecast release to the public, they're now down to 2.5%. Well, the Atlanta Fed has an in-quarter tracking model, and it's saying that real GDP, based on everything that we know right now, and there's still a lot of information yet to be known for the third quarter, is tracking at a 0.9% annual rate. Well, maybe the numbers will be a little bit better at the end of the quarter. But the inflation rate is very low, so it looks like nominal GDP in the third quarter is tracking 1.5%, which is a percentage point lower than the Federal Reserve's much downward revised forecast of nominal GDP for this year, which is 2.5, and which was 4% over last year. So the economy continues to lose momentum. It has individual spurts, but they are not self-reinforcing. They're not sustaining.
Now, J.P. Morgan came out the other day and said that they thought that the – and it kind of coincides with our friend Harry Dent's some of his statistics from demographics. They came out and said that they expected the market to be between a 4 and 8% range for the next 5 to 7 years, from 2020 to 2022, where it looks like we start getting a pickup in demographics at that time. Do you think that our economy is just going to go sideways, and that something, a prognosis like that, could be correct?
I think that the best that we can expect is a very subpar growth with intermittent periods of weakness, and the rate of growth is going to be too weak to raise the standard of living. And, you know, this is really the pattern that we've had for the last, more or less off and on, for the last 20 years. And, in fact, we measure the standard of living by the median household income and inflation-adjusted dollars. Well, the latest year is where it was in 1996, so that's 20 years ago. So the economy is not doing well. Policies at the governmental level have basically failed. We continue to try the same monetary and fiscal policies, and as long as we do that, the results are going to be the same. It's going to take a complete reorientation of the approach, and until that occurs, I'm sticking with the views I just gave you.
Okay, and if we do ever reach the point where we work our way out of this, can we get out of this without severe pain, or are we going to have a major reset, do you think, in asset values to get us out of this thing?
Well, it would. The problem is that, well, the research indicates that the economies can function in a normal cyclical way so long as public and private debt stays under 250% of GDP. Well, the problem is that we're at 370. And we're not making any strides toward moving there. Japan is continuing to leverage up. China, at the time of the Lehman crisis, 2008, public and private debt was about 80% of GDP. It's quadrupled since then. It's around 320%.
Wow.
So the problem is that there is no major economy in the world that has a clean balance sheet. As a result of that, there's no one that's in a position to provide the engine of growth for the world. And so we're stuck here with trying to pick each other's pockets through various short-term means, such as currency depreciation. And there's no vibrant path forward.
Wow.
That's the way I see it.
Well, I guess that sideways prediction from J.P. Morgan is likely to be true. Dr. Hunt, thank you so much for being with us today.
Nice to be with you, Mike.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.